This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
My brand new book, Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth, is now available. So much more than a book, this is a guide that allows me to hold your hand through your birth preparation journey. With over a decade of experience and knowledge packed in to ensure you really are empowered in the way you deserve to achieve a positive birth, regardless of the twists and turns that crop up. Make sure that you get your hands on Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth book now and are empowered to have the birth experience that you deserve. Hello, I'm Pip and welcome to the Midwife Pip podcast, the home of expert information and real chats on all things pregnancy, birth and beyond. Remember, as a podcast listener, you can get 15% off all my online courses at midwifepip.com using the code podcast15. As a mum, there is nothing I wouldn't do to protect my little boy. And I was honestly shocked to hear statistics like at least one child under 5 years of age dies from an accident, of which 75% take place in their own home every year. Our homes should be safe places for our little ones to explore and thrive. So I am super excited by this week's guest as we learn how to keep our little ones as safe as they can be in our homes. This week, I am joined by the wonderful Kate Ball, founder of Mini First Aid. Kate is a pediatric first aid specialist, mum of six, including two sets of twins. There's literally nothing she doesn't know about little ones. And featured on BBC One Dragon's Den in 2021, securing an investment from Sarah Davis, MBE. Kate, welcome. And apologies for my croaky voice. We've got all of those back to school, back to nursery life bugs. But thank you for coming to join me.
It is a pleasure. And the croaks are in this department as well. It's something about September, isn't it? It's like, here you go, have the germs. It's awful. So I feel your pain.
I know. But anyway, people say that croaky voices are sexy. So we're obviously just super hot stuff tonight.
Just check us out.
These mamas have still got it. Kate, take me back, first of all. I'm really interested to see why Mini First Aid became Mini First Aid. Was it because of your own experiences? Because little Finley has just turned one and he was quite late in the crawling department, which I didn't realize at the time, but I was actually really, really grateful for, because now life is chaos. Like, he's everywhere and everything is a toy, whether it's a toy or not.
Yeah, well, so my background is that I worked in corporate training. I worked in the corporate world, and I'm sure, like lots of your listeners, I had a big piece of juggle in my mind as to what I was going to do returning to work after having my first baby. My job wasn't particularly doable. It meant that I would be away from home, lots of global travel, which suddenly didn't seem so cool once I had a baby, and I just wanted to be at home with him. But the other piece for me was that I always had this real passion for first aid in the particular area of saving lives, so CPR. We had a family circumstance where, very tragically, my brother passed away. He had a condition called cardiomyopathy. And you see it a lot in the press, sadly, a lot in the press. It affects young men particularly, and when they do pressure on their hearts, it might be in extreme sports or athletics. In my brother's case, it was running around on a beach. They can go into cardiac arrest. And unfortunately for my brother, two things happened. One is that he didn't know he had this condition, so therefore there was no forewarning. And second of all, the people that were with him at the time didn't know how to do CPR. So in the point from when the accident happened to when the ambulance arrived, arrived, there was a gap where they were attempting or having a go. And it always, it took me a long time to find what I was going to do with this desire to make sure that people learned CPR. But once I matched that with having had a baby and feeling so passionately about him, I've never felt love like it than when I had my own baby. And this real fear that if something happened to him, whether I would know what to do or people around us would know what to do. And that just sort of cemented that I needed to teach it, and I needed to teach it to parents. And I started in my kitchen, getting parents to pay me to teach them for a couple of hours. I trained up as a first aid instructor, and that was 7 years ago. And now mini first aid are training 1,000 families every week. Wow. Teaching them how to save babies' lives. So yeah, it's been quite a journey.
Quite a journey, but my goodness, you must be so proud of the impact that you're having on families, because it's so needed. Like, what qualifies you to become a parent? Nothing, does it? It's suddenly this massive responsibility that you have to keep this little human thriving and safe, and it's terrifying, really.
It is. And I think, you know, for us, so many parents come to our classes, and if something has already happened or they've experienced a worry or a stress or an emergency situation, they quite often will talk about panic, that adrenaline rush. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know who was around to help me. And in the UK, I think we're really blessed with such an amazing health service, paramedics, etc. However, you've still got to wait for the ambulance to come. And sometimes in some parts of the UK, that can be 8 minutes, 12 minutes, which even though it doesn't sound very long, if you've got a very poorly baby or perhaps even a baby that's not breathing or having a seizure, not knowing what to do can just be the most frightening thing for a parent. So it's just about going, right, okay, if we teach you what you do, then it doesn't stop the situation. These things happen, but it just means that if it happens, it makes you much more secure in knowing what you're doing. It's peace of mind, really. So yeah, so that's the idea.
Oh, so important. And unfortunately, the times that we live in, those ambulance wait times aren't getting any shorter anytime soon. So no, actually not. Equipping ourselves with those basic but potentially life-saving skills is just even more important than ever, isn't it, I think?
Well, I think for us, the other thing is that parents, we don't want to frighten people, because I know when we see new parents or parents that are quite often expecting to have come to our classes before their baby's born, is that they're really excited. They're in that lovely sort of bubble that you don't want to burst. I don't want to say to anybody, your baby's going to stop breathing, or your baby might choke or have a seizure, because the likelihood is it won't happen. So it's how we deliver that, and just saying, if it happens, you feel that you have the knowledge. Or if it happens to your friend's baby,
and you're sat at a cafe and, like, absolutely, you know,
you're the one that's there when somebody's cup of coffee is knocked over and it lands on baby, or anything like that, that does happen. Yeah. You can be the one that can jump up and go, it's all right, I've learned it, I know what I'm doing.
Kate's taught me what to do. I'm here. You're safe. I love it. That's it. Now, Kate, what we want to talk about though is homes, because it's one of those, I think when we're out and about, we kind of scan the room perhaps a little bit more because it's not our safe, known environment, but we kind of take for granted our home that's our familiar setting, but it's obviously not our baby's familiar setting when they're starting to learn about life. Why is it that our homes are so hazardous? Because to us, homes are home, aren't they? Like, they're our safe, cozy place. Nothing bad happens in our four walls.
Well, I think generally, I think when we do a home safety course as well as our first aid classes, and when we do that course with parents, one of the activities that we get them to do, which I'm sure they all love me for it, but
I know what you're going to say because I've done it.
What we get everybody to do is we ask everybody to crawl around on their hands and knees and look at the world of your home from your baby's viewpoint. And it's a very different place. If anybody,
a bit dusty as well.
Yeah, dusty. Goodness knows, you might find some extra change under the sofa. You never know. We never judge anyone when we do our classes. But the reality is that when you see people doing that and going, oh my gosh, when I see the wires hanging down, or the fact that I've perhaps put things in a pile, or perhaps I've got one of those wax diffusers and there's hot wax burning just on the side, or perhaps I've just put my cup of coffee just on a coffee table, all those things suddenly look very different from a baby's perspective. And I don't think any parent out there would ever intend for their baby to be injured at home, but I think sometimes people think, oh, it's okay, I've put a stair gate in, we're good, we're all right. But it's thinking about what can my baby get access to? And yes, they do. And especially when they're on the move, and you'll know this, Pip, the 1 year old, is they're on the move, they're everywhere.
Within a split second. Like, can't take my eyes off him, Kate. Nightmare.
And the opening of cupboards. You know, so we have cupboard locks in our house, and we were always advised, which I think is a great piece of advice, to have one cupboard which you allow to be opened, but it's just full of plastic containers. So they can pull them out, wooden spoons, pull them out to their heart's content, but there's nothing in there that's going to do them any harm. But I think it's just that rule that from the baby's viewpoint is seeing around your home and looking at each room. And, you know, I also say to parents sometimes, if you've got a room in your house and you just look and you just think, oh my gosh, this is a disaster waiting to happen in this room for our baby, unless you need to be in there with your baby, make it a grown-up space, make it a space that you don't go in with your baby. And actually, we still have that. We have a living room in our house where only my older children are allowed to go in it. My younger ones, my two sets of twins, who are crackers and knock everything over and ball in great balls of flurry of excitement, and they run everywhere, they're not allowed in that room. We just shut the door and we just say, no, that's a grown-up's room, because it's easier to do that than to try and baby-proof every single zone in my house. So it might be that there's just rooms that you just have to shut the door on and say, no, we're not going to let baby go in there.
Yeah, that's a good advice. So we are renovating our house. So that means that there are definitely rooms that are more of a building site than a home, which obviously is not ideal for a one-year-old that's interested in every single thing. So we've done exactly that. We've just got a room that has got like a heavy sliding door that's just slid and locked. And then that sort of back part of the house that's got drills everywhere and is chaos just isn't entered. He hasn't found it yet. Yeah. He's living in half a house. Just for that reason, you've got to pick your battles, haven't you? And be realistic.
Yeah, absolutely. He doesn't know. You're not doing them any disservice. They can enjoy that when they're older. And that's just much more risk adverse for you. And also it means that you can feel a little bit more relaxed in your own home as well. And so having your baby in a space where you close the door or you put a gate across and you say, actually, this is the space that we're going to play in and we're going to be in because it's a safe space. I've covered the sockets. I've got the things to stop them bumping their heads on the corners. I've got cupboard locks on, etc. And all other provisions that you've put in place, is far easier to manage in a smaller space than it actually is if you give your baby free roam of the whole house.
Yeah, 100%. What do you see, Kate, or from, you know, the research that you guys do, what are the most common accidents in the home?
Right. So the most common accident in the home, well, it's sort of level pegging at the moment. So the stats, we're just seeing some new stats. So it was always trips and falls. So trips and falls can be pretty much tripping and falling anywhere in the home, but particularly on the stairs. So and that's baby or that parent carrying baby. So I've got some advice really that we would suggest with trips and falls on the stairs. First of all, is that making sure that you fit a stair gate. And there are different types of stair gate. And in our baby proofing course, we talk about different stair gates and how you fit them and how you can make them work for different spaces. And the good manufacturers will help you do that, will help you through question lines or through direct DM messaging through Instagram, etc. They will help you to decipher which gate will work well. But the reason that you need to put a gate on the stairs is that as soon as babies can crawl, babies also want to learn to climb. They're just mammals. They want to do, you know, they want to climb up things. And so every parent will say, oh my gosh, I turned my back and they were halfway up the stairs. And whilst we need to teach our babies to climb the stairs at some point, because they're going to have to navigate the stairs, if they are going to climb the stairs, they absolutely have to do it with your supervision. So if you're there, great, because you're there supervising and watching them go up on their tummy and also coming down on their bottoms, feet first. That's always a good thing for babies to do. And either on their bottoms if they're a toddler, or if they're a baby, turn them over onto their tummy and actually get them to come down feet first on their tummy. But what you don't want is you don't want a baby trying to navigate and do that by themselves, because they'll try, and that's when there's a risk of a trip or a fall or sliding and falling from one end of the stairs to the other. When it comes to stair gates as well, one of the things that we always say to parents is make sure everybody knows how to use them, because if you start to climb over your stair gate, which I've seen so many people do because they go, I can't work the lock, so I climb over it, what ends up happening is the kids copy you and they think, oh, this is how we get over the stair gate. We just sort of fashion over it. So teach everybody how to use it. Because the other thing is, which is frustrating with manufacturing of stair gates, is they're all slightly different. So you think you've got your stair gate nailed, and then you go to your friend's house and theirs is completely different. But knowing how to use it and making sure guests know how to use it so that they can open and close it properly is really important. So trips and falls are... can be a biggie. And also, when I talked about the adults on the stairs, is that you need to demonstrate very early on to babies and young children how to climb the stairs properly. So obviously we talked about that, you showing them when they're very little about coming down on their tummies and going up that way. But actually, as they get older, we want to demonstrate good behavior. So as an adult, we need to hold on. So we're not very good at holding the handrails because we sort of feel like we don't need that. We fly up and down the stairs. Sometimes we might have a washing in one arm, a bag under the other, and it means that we have no hands. So we always say to parents, make sure you have a hand free so that you can hold on. Because one, that means you're not going to fall, but also it's teaching your children, who are always watching you, eagle-eyed, that that's what we do. And then they learn that and they replicate that behavior. So if you're carrying your baby, make sure you are holding the handrail whilst holding your baby. And that was always tricky for me because having twins,
yeah.
So I used to have to take one 20 down, put them down, go back up and get the next 20 and not be tempted to have one on each hip on the stairs. Because by doing that, I then didn't have a hand that should I slip or go to trip, I've got nothing. And nobody's going to drop their baby. That's the one thing you hold on to, because so nobody's going to throw their baby down. So you're going to hold on to the baby. It's really important. So trips and falls, I guess, are the biggie.
So like, if you can do that with twins, I need to start doing that, because I definitely don't do that, Kate. I'm guilty. But yeah. If you can do it with two babies, I can do it with one.
Yeah. 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 And then
no excuse.
The other biggie for common accidents, which unfortunately is growing, is burns as a result of hot drinks.
Okay.
So when we talk about burns, people say, oh yeah, I put my handles in, I know to put my handles in sideways. And we're all quite good at that. And there's stove guards and all sorts of things. And I know that, you know, the oven is up high, and when it's on, I keep baby away. I know all about burns, but actually it's hot drinks that are becoming the biggest challenge. And actually there's in October this year, there's going to be a big press campaign by the Children's Burns Trust all about the number of children that are being seen in A&E units now as a result of burns from hot drinks.
Wow. And
it's because... you make a brew, and I know, you know, that desperately need that cup of tea, right? Especially when you're like sleep deprived. We all need it. We thrive on it. And I admire anyone who can do it without. But it's very easy just to plonk the cuppa down and or put it. So our best advice is really up high. I'm reaching up with my arm now, up high, turn the handle away, but also use a thermos cup. And that's a really good hack, actually, because it keeps your brew warm, because mine always used to get cold eventually.
Oh my gosh, I bet it did. Two sets of twins. I'm surprised you ever managed to even make it, Kate.
Yeah. But if it falls over, you get a much smaller volume. If the mouthpiece is open, you get a much smaller volume coming out. So that's where we're seeing, unfortunately, a real increase in the number of accidents with children at home, is with burns with hot liquids, which is tragic, really. It's really, you know, it's a really terrible thing that's happening.
Yeah, and like you say, because it's the simple things, isn't it? It's the really simple things, like where you put your cup of tea, that we just take for granted every day, because for years and years before we've had children, we've made a cup of tea and put it next to us. That's just what we've done. It's like, you know, it's our bread and butter, isn't it?
Yeah,
I have to make a confession, Kate, because we had a small burn accident, nothing drastic, but it was in the winter, so when Finley was little. And my husband, we just washed all the towels in that Finley sleeping bag. So my husband came upstairs thinking he was being really nice, because his sleeping bag had just come out of the tumble dryer. So it was all warm and cozy to put him in. But of course, sleeping bags often have zips that are metal. So the metal end of the zip was obviously then really hot. So he popped it on little Finley. And rather than him going like, oh, like you were expecting to, he went, ah! And obviously we took it straight off, and I was like, oh my God, it's the zip, like the zip's hot. And actually it left like a tiny minuscule pink prick mark, and Finley stopped crying within about 5 seconds and we realized and removed it. But it's really little things like that you just don't even think about. It's like, oh, this is all snuggly, I'll take it straight up to him because it's a cold day and he's just out of the bath. disaster.
So the burn that we had at home, and bear in mind that, you know, this is what I do for my job. You know, I talk about making things safer and then I talk about first aid. So you'd think that I'd know, but it happens to us all. We've got one of those heated towel rails in our bathroom. And something happened at the early part of the winter last year, where when the thermostat came on, it made our heated towel rail heat up almost like super hot. And one of my little ones used it, really bad design of ours for our bathroom, but used it as a handrail to help them climb out of the bath and put their hand onto the burning hot towel. And we had to treat it as a burn and place it in the cold running water. But you know, and it's so we're like, right now, so we, the heated towel does the job of drying the towels, but we had to get the thermostat on it looked at because it was doing just that. And it wasn't, you know, and that's the sort of, you think, oh my gosh, you feel so terrible, burn mark on the hand, etc. But these things can happen, you know, they can happen, and that's why you need to know your first aid as well, so you know what to do. But it is just going around the home and just looking with a fresh pair of eyes at each zone that your baby or your child is going to be in and think, what do I need to do here to make it a little bit safer? And the other thing I would say is, don't be shy to say that to people's homes who you're visiting. So I'm thinking the grandparents now. So if you go to my mum and dad's house, love them, it's like ornaments everywhere.
Yeah.
Or because they can, you know, they can have a beautiful fireplace with beautiful things. And I just have to say to them, look, we're coming. Things have got to go, just got to move temporarily, or we're going to need to just be in this room because there's not this. They have an open fire because they can, because they don't, you know, they understand, they're adults, that they're not going to put their hand in it. But we have to do that little bit of thinking. And then I've got another relative who has a pond. And when we visit, we have to be absolutely there and present because they don't have a guard on their pond, which fills me with horror. But we have to make sure that we're present and supervising. We don't have a pond at home, so anything that the kids see there is naturally very intriguing. So, yes, you also have to be really on it when you go and visit other people. And don't be afraid that when other people come to you, that you say, right, this is what we do in our house. We keep the stair gate shut. We shut this door because we're not going in this room. Please don't wedge this open, or please, you can do that, you know. And I think it's really important, particularly if you've got parents that sort of say, oh, wrap them up in cotton wool, in my day it didn't matter. And the reality is it did. It's just that all of the accidents did happen years ago. They just weren't documented. Now we hear more about them in the media. So make sure you tell all your guests as well that you're baby-proofing your home to make it a little bit safer.
Whilst we're talking about keeping our homes safe, I think it's important we think about how we could make them a nurturing environment too. Encouraging communication, language, and imagination in our children is beautiful to watch. And their early years provide such a powerful time for growth and opportunity. To learn more about how you can support your little one's developmental milestones, head over to www.apticlub.co.uk/midwifepip. Yeah, and just saving everyone a lot of stress and discomfort as well. It makes everyone's life a bit easier and more relaxed, isn't it, and more comfortable. So it can only be a good thing. And what I love is that, you know, the stuff that you talk about, Kate, isn't complicated. Like, it's not big complicated things, it's just little changes. So talk me through some of your tips that we can do to try and keep baby safe, Kate, because like we've said, they get everywhere, they get absolutely everywhere.
So we've done crawling around on your hands and knees, and you're all thanking me for that and rolling your eyes and going, thanks for that, Kate.
Getting the duster out.
Yeah, great. Thanks for that. Oh my gosh, the confessional. You might find some things that you'd lost, you never know, you might thank me. The other really good tip is around protecting little fingers for doorways. So we talk about sometimes having what they call door jammers or something around the door to stop it slamming. Now that's great if you've managed to get hold of one of those and you have that all set up, but sometimes you might not be, or you might be going somewhere where you think, oh my gosh, that door keeps shutting and I'm really worried about little one's fingers. If you fold a towel or a blanket to between 3 and 5 centimetres thick, so quite thick, and put it over the top of the door, that will act like a door jammer. So it will effectively stop the door from slamming completely. which means it protects little fingers from being trapped. So brilliant. I've had parents say this to me, that when they've gone on holiday and perhaps the property that they've rented or are staying in isn't as baby-proofed as they'd like, and they've gone, oh my gosh, we didn't even think about the doors. And so by putting a towel or a blanket over the top of the door, you just need to make sure that at night then it comes off and you shut the door firmly for fire safety. But during the day when baby's around, pop something over the top of the door and that will wedge it open.
Great hack. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. We also would say, very importantly, to avoid, when you think about protectors, like corner protectors or things that go around things to stop bumps and little ones hurting themselves, quite often it's easy to get hold of these items made out of foam. And our big word of caution is that they are hugely, there's two things that's wrong with foam. First of all, they're very bendy, which means that they can fall off and break really easily. The second one is they're hugely flammable. And believe it or not, you can still buy stuff that goes round your hearth of your fireplace made of foam. So you imagine that you're putting that there, because you're thinking, my baby's crawling and I don't want them to hit themselves on the hearth. But actually it's near to your wood burner or your gas fire, and you're actually putting something that's hugely flammable to a fire. So avoid anything foam made that's branded as baby proofing or baby safety, because just because it's on the market as a baby safety product doesn't necessarily mean that it's been through all the checks to make sure that it's a safe product to use. It's a free market out there, unfortunately. So some of the rubbishy products creep in, as well as some really good ones. So just avoid foam. So blanket over the door to stop little ones jamming fingers. That crawl around your house on hands and knees at baby's viewpoint and make those changes. And just avoid any baby-proofing products that are made of foam. There are three sort of top tips.
That's really, and foam, I'm assuming, could also be nibbled at.
Yes, yeah, it can. Hazard. So that's it, that's right. So if it fell off, so say for example you bought a foam corner protector and it fell off, because it sometimes they have rubbishy glue to stick them on. If it falls off, then little ones could nibble it and that little piece could get into their mouths as well. I've got one bonus extra for you. Which people now then go, so thanks for that, Kate. You've made me crawl around on my hands and knees. Now you're going to give me another one that I'm never going to forget. And that is, when you look at your hob in your kitchen, when I say to parents on our classes, which is the favourite ring on the hob? And everybody sort of says, oh, front right or front left. That's where people tend to say, that's the one I go to put my pan on, right? When I'm making porridge or boiling potatoes or whatever.
I'm a front right girl.
Right, front right. So now, Pip, you've got to become a back right.
Okay.
So from today onwards, you've got to either become a back right or a back left, because what you do by using those first is that's much safer for baby, because it eliminates that risk of the pan being close to the edge of the surface. So obviously if you're doing a roast dinner and you've got a pan on every ring, then obviously it's all going to be
shut
covered.
The door, keep the baby
out. Most of us, that's right. Most of us, when we're cooking dinner, it's one or two pans that we have on the hob. So go for the back. Make the back your new favourites. And it's one of those things that in your brain you have to reprogram, because everybody goes to the same place. And I always have people on my class going, yeah, I'm a front right. I'm a front right. So you need to change it to make sure that you go for the back. And that makes it so much safer that if baby reached up, then they're not able to get anywhere near that front positioning of the hob where something
could be. Perfect sense, doesn't it?
There's a challenge.
Someone tells you, you're like, you wouldn't even think of it until someone's like, well, why don't you just move that, you know, a foot back? Genius, yeah. Kate. Genius.
Yeah, there we are. There we are.
You're changing my life here tonight. You're changing my life, I'm telling you. Can I just touch on something you just mentioned there? So these foam products that are readily available on wherever you might search for a baby safety product. So does that mean that baby safety products are not regulated properly? I'm just thinking, how are they available if they're not safe? Do you know what I mean?
There are safety standards to which if a product is packaged properly, it should tell you the EN, which is the European number a safety rating, or BS, which is British Standards rating, that safety standard that it meets. If that's not there, then it hasn't had any safety testing. Actually, there are some really good brands or some really good safety product businesses where you can actually seek advice and say to them, I just need to know about the safety rating of this product and is it suitable for use. But anything, if it comes out of packaging, out of box, or it doesn't carry a safety standard rating on it, then it hasn't been tested for suitability.
Okay, that's really good to know. So it's down to us to just check the standards.
Sadly, it is. And I think if you were to talk to a well-established, well-known high street retailer, you could probably feel a lot more comfortable with what you're searching for. However, it's not a requirement to sell a safety product for it to have had any testing. So sometimes sometimes they can still trip into the retail. If you're not sure, you can always message us at Mini First Aid and just say, I'm looking at this product. And if you DM us through our social channels and say, I'm looking at this, we can always check it out for you. We've got a safety business partner as well that will also be able to check as well. So we would gladly give somebody a little bit of help. Don't buy quickly or impulsively. Do a little bit of research on your product. Generally, you tend to find that things that are unbelievably cheap, almost too cheap to be true. So you go to buy a door jammer and you discover that you can have 10 of them for a fiver. There's a reason that there's a price point there. And because when retailers or when manufacturers have had to go through various safety checks, it is a cost to the business. So you do tend to find that some of the more the safer safety products tend to come with a higher price tag, but it's worth paying it. It's definitely worth paying. And they last for longer as well. And then when you've finished with your safety product, whether that's a corner protector, a door jammer, a safety gate, gift it on. Mm-hmm. Give it to the next family. You know, we are now just out of sort of coming. We don't have any stair gates any longer. And so we've gifted ours on because we had metal stair gates. They live forever. And so as long as they're installed properly and taken out properly, is that they can go on to another family and be used time and time again, or you can sell them. So if you're really active on Facebook Marketplace or any of the selling pages, Vinted, all those sorts of things, you can sell them. If you've got items of the original packaging, that really helps because some parents are quite nervous to buy stuff without its original packaging. But you can sell, you know, you can sell your safety products on as long as they're in good working order and you can vouch for them on where you bought them.
Yeah, that's really nice. And in the world of sustainability, I think for lots of parents, that's quite a nice thing to be able to do as well, isn't it? Mm. So stair gates, we mentioned. And yeah. I think when we think about babies and homes, stair gates just like spring to mind, don't they? And there's obviously a massive range out there, Kate, when it comes to a stair gate for a home. Are there any key points on something like that that you'd recommend looking at when you're purchasing your stair gate?
So when you buy a stair gate, first of all, is that you have something called a pressure fit stair gate, and that's where it uses pressure. So four screwing bolts to get pressure from either side. So the side of the stairs and the wall, for example. Or you can have the other type of gate you can have is one that screws or mounts onto the wall. So it doesn't require that pressure. Now, they sometimes can be a little bit more expensive. Aesthetically, they tend to look a little bit nicer. Not always, but they generally look a bit nicer, but they take a little bit more installation because you've got to drill them into the wall itself. So some people are not so keen to do that. But with a pressure fit stair gate, which tends to be the choice that most parents and carers choose and opt for, is just make sure that you fit it properly. And when I say fit it properly, what that means is that they come with like a little white disc that sits over the end of the bolts. And they're actually designed to just have a very small screw, and it's only tiny, but a very small screw screwing them into the frame or the wood or the wall that they're intended to sit by. And some people say, oh gosh, I don't want to screw into the wall. Actually, it stops it from moving. And if you don't put that little screw in, what you tend to find is if you just use the sticky pad that they often come with, is that that stair gate might move if somebody applies pressure against it. In other words, if somebody falls against it or tries to clamber on it.
Or your baby thinks, what's this new toy that you've put at the top of the stairs for me, Mum?
And it could cause an injury, but also it can absolutely ruin your walls, you know. And when we've spent a long time doing up our homes and making them beautiful, we don't want these great big, we've had some amazing photos shown to us by people going, look at the chunk my safety gate took out of my wall. So just by making that tiny little drill hole and putting the white discs on properly means they'll stay put. And then when you take your stair gate away, all you have to do is get some filler, fill the hole. You wouldn't even know it had been there. Another thing to think about with pressure fit stair gates is with these pressure fit stair gates, you get a bar across the bottom, which keeps them pressurized effectively. If you are putting those, we advise that you don't put those at the top of the stairs, because then there's effectively a piece of bar that even when the gate is open, you can trip over. But if you do take the decision to install one at the top of the stairs, make sure that it only opens towards the landing. So there's no risk of you tripping over that bar and then falling on down the stairs when you open the gate. So gate towards you on your landing. But try if you can, if you're thinking about installation, in avoiding those pressure fit bar gates at the top of the stairs. Bottom of the stairs is always good. The other thing I should mention with stair gates is that our recommendation is that by the time your baby child is two, you need to think about taking those stair gates out. And sometimes on the stairs particularly, and sometimes people go, what? Two? Oh my goodness, they're everywhere. But the problem you have when you get to a two-year-old is that they start to be able to climb, and climb in quite an agile way. So if you have a stair gate, for example, at the top of your stairs, and then a baby climbs on top of it, there's the risk that not only will they fall down, but they are then falling down from a much greater height. Mm. So by the time they're two, that's when we're starting to do education on safe climbing up and down stairs. So up and down on tummies when they're able, when they're walking, holding the banisters, holding a hand of an adult or a grown up. So think about, it is a challenge, because I know in our house, for example, we had babies and toddlers.
Yeah.
So it's like, when do it? So you do have to make your own call. Mm. But broadly speaking, the recommendation is if you're looking at a two-year-old at that point, if you have a gate on the stairs, it really you should be thinking about taking it off.
Amazing. That's really good. So I wouldn't have known that. And our stairs fill me with dread, Kate, because we've got a split staircase at the top. So okay. I'm just like, well, I can't just gate every single corner, because no. It's like a prison. So that's really interesting to hear that actually, yes, we have to, when they're two, start making, and that's where it starts now, doesn't it? That's when we need to start role modeling now, stair safety, because they are little heads are sponges.
Everything. They watch you do everything, you know, and everything from safe eating to safety around the home, it all starts, and they copy you as grown up. So you break your own rules and they just copy you. So yeah, absolutely.
Amazing. Now I was going to ask you, Kate, how we can select the kind of best home safety products. I know you mentioned no foam, those safety regulations. Is there anything else we should look for when we're looking at a product for our home?
So what you should find is when you're looking for a product for the home is look at feedback. So look at star ratings, look at people's comments. Now retailers encourage people to write comments. So you want to look at things like ease of installation. Was it easy to install? Was the was the guide there? Were all the parts there that you needed? You should also find that you should get a really strong description of the product. So what you expect to get, its size, its colour, what box it will appear in and how you install it. And that should all come just on the features. And if that's not there, that's where you need to not be looking. And then your final one really then is to talk to your retailer. So the retailers of safety products, if it's a good safety product, the retailer themselves will have that knowledge, but also the manufacturer will have provided that information. So I mean, I can give some good brand examples. Ooh, if
please do. Yeah, please.
One of the partners that we work at Mini First Aid is with a brand called Fred Safety, who are part of a business called Cheeky Rascals. And Fred Safety, they had the lady who set up Fred Safety had her own motives, I guess, really, to make sure that one is that safety products were better quality, more durable, safer, you know, a safe safety product, also a reasonable price point, but made out of good product that meant that they have longevity. So you can use it for all of your children. And what cheeky rascals and Fred Safety don't know about safety is not, in my eyes, is not worth knowing. They have a wonderful chat box on their website where you can fill in, you can talk live to them, or you can DM Fred Safety or Cheeky Rascals through their social pages, and they will provide you with reference guides. They'll even, if you've taken one of their gates, safety gates down, for example, between children, and you're going to reinstall it and you've forgotten how to do it, they've even got somebody who will talk you through how to do it. And if you are purchasing or considering purchasing a safety product and you're not quite sure if it's right, they'll talk you through it. So we had a lady on one of our classes recently who had a piece of furniture, and we talk about securing wobbly furniture that children might pull themselves up on to the wall. It was a piece of a well-known retailer that sells lots of block-based furniture. And they were looking to how they could secure that to the wall in their children's playroom. And Fred Safety were able to provide the advice. They would be able to provide the piece of kit that they were then able to secure this unit to the wall and advise them on how to install it. Amazing. So they wouldn't, I wouldn't necessarily describe them as the cheapest in the market, but from a value from what you get in knowledge, it absolutely goes over and above anything else.
Peace of mind, right? Like, you can actually know that you've done the best thing. And if an accident does happen, you've done everything you can to try and mitigate that, which is I think half of parenting, isn't it?
That's right. And you can find Fred Safety products at most of your major high street and online baby retailers now as well. So you can search Fred Safety and find where they're being sold, as well as buying direct, which we think is brilliant.
Yeah, it makes everything easy, doesn't it? So I've got the Fred Safety door jammers on our doors downstairs. And Kate, the reason I've got those is because I remember when I did a call with you and you showed us a door jammer that essentially looked like a child's toy. I think it was like yellow and had like dots and a smiley face on. And it made me laugh because I can totally see that you'd walk around and be like, oh, that's a child's product in a way. You know, maybe it's in their playroom, so it's kind of fitting because it's got a tiger on or something. But you're literally making a safety product a toy. And you're like, this is awful. This is really dangerous. And it really just came home to me that actually these plain grey door jammers are very disinteresting. And actually that's how our safety product should be.
Absolutely. We pack them in our suitcases when we go on holiday because you quite often find places where the doors are really heavy and they slam. So we pack those with us. But that's the thing, is one of the things around the safety standards is that you shouldn't make a safety product look appealing to children. Mm-hmm. So when you start to put faces on it or make it in bright colours, you're starting to almost say this is something you play with. So that foam jammer that you're describing... Yeah. You can get them in zebra print and all sorts, and they're on your major online search engines, and they're also very, very cheap. They're made of foam, which isn't great, so they don't work very well, they fall off easily. But then a little one gets hold of them and they're naturally going to want to start to play with it, put it in their mouths, the foam breaks apart, it becomes a choking risk. They are just absolute avoid because they're really dangerous.
So if you've got one of those in your house, please just take that to the bin right now. Kate, thank you so much. Now, everyone that comes on the podcast, I just ask for 3 top tips, and I feel like you could probably give us 303 top tips, but fire away with 3 if you can.
Right. So my 3 top tips are: take your house, if we're thinking of home safety, and take each room and go in with that baby's view of the world. So go and look, and if it's hands and knees again, but go and look and say, what changes do I need to make in this room to make it safe for baby? If you don't think you are able to make those changes, it's not going to work. Perhaps it's a rental property, or perhaps it's just not right with the furniture you've got in the room. That room's got to be a door shut, and it's not going to be a room that baby uses. So that's my first tip, is just really looking room by room. Make yourself a to-do list. We find people come on our classes and they just make a list of, I've got to go home and check this, I've got to go home and do this. My other top tip is making sure that you keep the lids shut on your detergent pods. So those boxes that you get your detergent pods in, they're quite tricky to open, right? So sometimes people go, do I need a degree in engineering to get them to open? But the reason that they're designed like that is, again, that's for safety, is so that it's a 2 pincer movement to get them to open. And that's so that babies and children can't get into them, because they don't have that advanced ability to do a 2 pincer movement. So when you do have it open, yay, I've got it open, I've put my washing on, shut the lid again afterwards, because so many people nod and laugh when we talk about it on our classes and say, oh yeah, my box of pods are sat open under my sink. And if you look at those pods, they look like sweeties, and little ones will just put them in their mouths, and detergent is so toxic. Because you think about what it does, getting stuff out of your clothes, or stains, poo stains, tomato sauce stains out of baby grows. So if it can do that, then you think about what it can do to little ones inside. So that's a good thing. It's just to keep lids shut and just learn how to do that pincer movement, practice it, and then you can get your pods and your pack open easily. And then I guess my final tip, really sort of going over to first aid, is to just make sure that you and anyone that's going to be around baby has basic first aid knowledge, knows what to do, because we can wrap our babies up in cotton wool, we think, but that's not going to be forever for them, is it? You can't walk around holding them all the time. You're going to need to let them to explore the world, and accidents do happen. Not everything is preventable, even if you've done all this baby proofing. So making sure that you have a good up-to-date knowledge of just basic first aid. What do I do if my baby's burnt, if my baby's choking or stops breathing, is just so integral to your parenting journey. That's my final top tip for tonight.
Oh, Kate, you're an absolute star. Thank you so, so much. What I'll do, Kate, if you don't mind, is if you drop me those safety standards, I'll pop them in the episode description as well, because I think for those people listening, that's probably really, really important.
Absolutely, no problem.
As well as obviously linking to the amazing first aid courses that Kate runs. And Kate, I'm right in thinking that they are available everywhere in the UK, but also if you aren't in the UK and you do live abroad, they are still available to you as well, aren't they? So everyone can access
you. You can learn with us either online via Zoom, or you can learn with us via a virtual class, which you can take at any time. So that's for the folks that are up in the middle of the night that want to learn with us. Or if you're in the UK and you're able to come to a class, then you can come and learn with us in person. And we'll also come and teach you at home. So if you've got a group of family and friends, you can learn first aid and baby home safety with your slippers on, which is dreamy. And then you don't even have to move. We'll come to you.
Oh, brilliant. So there is no excuse. We can all get a little bit of mini first aid and help keep our little ones safe. Thank you so much, Kate. You're a star.
Pleasure.
If you've enjoyed this chat and want to hear more on this topic, head over to midwifepip.com, where you'll find my accompanying blog post with highlights, my thoughts, extra information, and additional resources. And remember, leaving a review on my podcast, if you've enjoyed listening, really does make a huge difference to helping me reach more women with honest, reliable information. So please take a moment to do this, because when women support women, amazing things happen.